You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle, while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.
All right, welcome back, and joining us now is Matt Trujillo. He's a pastor out of Wisconsin, I believe it is. Is that right, Matt? I think that's right.
It is, yeah.
And I really appreciate what Matt has done, and he's done a great job in terms of making the point. He's got a book, a very well-selling book, and it's a very quick read, and it's really packed with information. Not that it's difficult to understand. It's not dense in that sense, but it is dense in terms of the richness that it conveys in a very small book that's easy to read. And he talks about it from a Christian perspective and even from a historical perspective. Even pagan Romans understood what we no longer understand in this country, and that is that there are higher moral laws. And we've had this discussion recently about should you follow illegal orders? I don't know why that's a controversy, but the fact that it is a controversy shows just how much we need this book from Matt. It's called The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate, and how do we control that when we have the people at the top that have gone bad? And you can find that at, is it defytyrants.com? Is that the website, Matt? I'm just going from memory here. I should have it in front of me. Okay, defytyrants.com. And so I would highly recommend that you get that book and read it. It's a small paperback. It's a great handout to law enforcement and other people, and that's the way Matt has used it. But I've had him on several times, and Ryan with For the Love of the Road sent us an email and said, you know, I've seen Matt on many times, and then I looked him up, looked up his background, and he said, I think it might be interesting if he gave us his testimony. Matt, you said you're willing to do that. Let us know how did you become a pastor? What was life like for you before you became a pastor?
Yeah, let me begin by saying I have a website where I wrote out my testimony, what Christ did in my life. I was 17 years old, nearly 18, when it all transpired. But I go into my life early on, and the website is howjesuschangedmylife.com. And I got that website probably 6 years ago. You would have thought that URL would have already been taken, but it wasn't. And so I got it for $2.99, howjesuschangedmylife.com. Wow. And also Pacific Garden Mission has a show called Unshackled. Mm-hmm. It's on in over 50 countries around the world. And they also did a radio dramatization of my conversion to Christ.
Wow.
And I also have the testimony of my mom. I did a short sermon about my mom. She was the first one in our family to come to Christ. Hmm. And that's also at that website, howjesuschangedmylife.com. Wow. So I grew up in the city of Detroit, Michigan. I was born in 1960. And while I was living there, a transformation was taking place in the neighborhood. Busing started in 1973, I think it was, and there was all kinds of racial tension within the city, and where I grew up, I was a minority.
Mm-hmm.
So very different. I live in a country that the macroculture, I'm in the majority, but where I lived, I was in the minority.
Hmm.
And so what ended up happening was, as a young man, I got involved in drugs. And I never saw the reason to buy drugs when you could sell them and make a lot more money. So at the age of 15, I began to deal drugs and then had all of the free drugs you wanted on top of that. Mm-hmm. And then I got involved more with the bad crowd, you know, stealing cars, robbing people, fighting other gangs, burning down buildings. These were all things that were part of my life. My dad had left when I was 11 years old on Christmas Eve. He left my mom, and that had a huge transformation in life at our house. And so I can't emphasize strongly enough how important it is for men to be in the home, for there to be fathers in the home. It has a huge impact. All the studies that have been done, David, show the negative impact upon sons and daughters when the man is no longer in the home. And unfortunately, by the time your average American turns 18 in America, more than half of them aren't living with their biological mother and their biological father.
Wow.
That's how broken down family is in America.
Yes.
Imprisonment, drug use, crime, all this type of stuff becomes far more prevalent in young men when there isn't a father in the home. And as I said, every statistic proves that. It was true in my life. And so I was living that life, and all of a sudden my mom threw me out of the house when I was 14 for dealing dope. And I went to live with my dad. He still lived in Detroit also, and didn't have anywhere else to go. And he let me stay there for 6 months. And then after 6 months, he threw me out of his house. So I had... wasn't doing good there. And so I decided I'm going to go back and see if my mom will take me in. And I remember we hadn't seen each other during that 6 months while I lived with my dad. And I remember standing outside her home. And I was just a punk, you know. And I was thinking, man, I got to go in here and put up with her mouth and all this. And I didn't really want to knock on the door, but I didn't have anywhere else to go. I'm 15 now. And so... I finally walked up and I knocked on the door, and my mom opened it, and she actually smiled when she saw me and was so surprised. She said, "Matt, come on in. I got to tell you what happened to me." And I was like, wow, okay. So I came in, I sat down on the couch, and she starts sharing with me how Jesus has come into her life, forgiven of her of all her sins, how she's flushed all her pills down the toilet. And she's a new creature in Christ. And I sat there and looked at my mom, and I was like, I knew something. This was not the same woman I knew 6 months earlier. Something dramatic had definitely taken place in her life. Understand, my mom was always on psych drugs after the divorce, you know, 4 years earlier. It was such a huge impact on her, David, that she had a nervous breakdown and ended up in a psych ward for 4 months. Our grandparents actually came over and took care of us at the house while she was in the hospital.
Wow.
And she tried all kinds of things after that to find peace, to find happiness. She tried Silva mind control. She tried men, you know, tried everything that the world tells you to find fulfillment in and peace and those types of things. And never. And so she was on these psych drugs to control her mood swings. Well, lo and behold, after I had left, she found out that my godmother, I was raised Catholic, my godmother, who was an alcoholic and had ruined her life, was put into a mental hospital. Three women came in, prayed over her, and God restored her mind, and she submitted her life to Christ and was radically transformed.
Wow.
So this news is all going around in the family that Vale, that was the name of my godmother, has radically changed her life, and she isn't drinking anymore, and she's out of the mental hospital. So my mom calls her up and wants to meet with her because her life, my mom's life is all messed up. So whatever happened to you, I want that to happen to me.
Yeah.
And my mom told me as I sat there on the couch that Vale came over and they met at the dining room table, and she asked her point blank. She said, "How did you change? Who's your counselor?" Because my mom was always going to this counselor and another counselor and another counselor. And my godmother didn't want to tell my mom that it was Jesus who changed her life, because she had been telling everybody that since she got out of the mental hospital, and they were all like, okay, you know, or, well, that's good for you. You needed that, you know, and things like that. So she didn't want to tell my mom because of the negative response and kind of mocking response she had gotten from various people. But my mom kept begging her and saying, who's your count? Come on.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Seriously, who's your counselor? And finally, she just looked at my mom and said, there is no counselor in human form, Annie.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ has radically transformed my life. Wow. And he's healed me. He's forgiven me of my sins. Radically transformed my life. And my mom said, she sat there and she was just like, I looked at her and I said, you're joking. My godmother said, I'm not joking. And so she took my mom. You know, I don't know if you remember back then, David, there was a huge revival taking place. A lot of Roman Catholics were being converted to Christ. And there was the Catholic charismatic movement. Mm-hmm. She took my mom to that. And my mom was totally turned off by it. But she went back a second time. And she was completely transformed by the power of God and had become a new Christian, flushed all her pills down the toilet, and was beginning this walk with the Lord. So she was the first one in our family to come to Christ. And when I sat there and I listened to all this from her, and she let me come back in her home, lo and behold, she gave me a book to read. She said, I want you to read this book. It's called The Cross and the Switchblade. David Wilkerson, who, of course, was the man who started Teen Challenge, which is an international organization meant to help young people who were caught up in gangs and drugs.
Yes.
And he was a country preacher from Pennsylvania. God called him to New York City, and he went and preached amongst the gangs. Nicky Cruz was his first convert. Huge transformation. So I started reading this book, right? The Cross and the Switchblade. First 40, 50 pages, a lot of gang stuff. Okay, that holds my interest. Then more of this Jesus stuff kept coming in, and I was just like, nah. So I threw the book aside after 40, 50 pages. So now another 2.5 years go by. Matt Chuella keeps living in rebellion to God. My life keeps going down like this. Mm-hmm. And I could tell you 100 stories, and I have some of them in that at the website where I share my story, how Jesus changed my life.com. But lo and behold, I ended up getting arrested for arson. And I got put into the county jail because they decided, even though I was a minor, 17 years old, they were going to try me as an adult because of the seriousness of the crime. Mm-hmm. And so I went in, and over the weekend, I got stuck in a holding cell. Two black guys. One was 40-something. He was in there for child molesting. The other guy was 19. He was in there for armed robbery. I was 17. All three of us know a little bit about God. The old guy was raised in a Christian home. The young guy, his dad was actually a deacon at a Baptist church. And of course, my mom had come to know Christ. If I could ever replay those videos, like when we get to heaven, David, I'd love to see three dumb pagans talking about God. And I don't know where they were at, but I had a serious interest. I saw my life was in utter ruin. And so lo and behold, I spent those 2 days with them talking about, we all talked about God almost kind of, the whole time.
Kind of reminds me, Matt, you know, we're talking about, kind of reminds me of the story about, you know, a blind man and you send him next to an elephant and he's like feeling around and trying to describe what this thing is that he's never seen before.
Yeah.
It's got this really little tracker. But yeah, that's kind of what it was like, I guess. So the elephant in the room,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The elephant in the room was Christ.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry. So I was going through withdrawal. I was all messed up on drugs. Mm. And we happened to be right where they had service. We couldn't go to it. And there was a guy in a suit who came by, and the one guy asked him for something to read. Of course, he brought us all Bibles. When I read the Bible, David, I didn't feel any pain or suffering from the withdrawal I was going through. When I set the Bible down, after a half hour, I'd start feeling all the illness and sickness again.
Wow.
And so finally, on Monday, I get taken to the cell block. There's nine guys to each cell. And I walk in, and this guy walks up to me. And he says, we have two rules in this cell. There's no fights. And if you start a fight, number two, if you start a fight, we all jump on you. And I looked around the room, and I was the smallest guy there. And I looked at him, and I said, I like these rules. That's all I said to him. And he showed me where my bunk was. So I went and climbed up on it, and there's a cement wall with a metal shelf on it. And there's one book sitting on it, and it was The Cross and the Switchblade by David Wilkerson. So here, 2.5 years have gone by. And I picked that book up. I spent the next 3 days finishing the book, reading it. I had just put it down 2 minutes earlier, and my probation officer comes in. She takes me out in this side room to meet with me. She goes, yeah, this is the sentence you're looking at, and we're going to try to get you into a live-in drug rehab program for a year to begin with, get you off all these drugs. And she goes, the program that we're looking to get you into is called Teen Challenge. So I had just put the book down. That was the story about how this organization started.
Yeah.
And now here's this lady, my probation officer, saying, we're going to try to get you into Teen Challenge.
Wow.
And that's exactly what happened. I ended up in Teen Challenge. The courts put me there. I was sentenced to 3 years. I had to spend the first year in a drug rehab program. Move over here because the sun's moving. So I went to church the first Sunday after I was taken there. And it was an Assembly of God church called Brightmore Tabernacle on the west side of Detroit. So when I walked in, there's probably 1,000 people there. And people are walking up to me saying how glad they are to see me. And I could tell they actually were glad to see me. It wasn't like they were glad to see me just because I had a joint to smoke or something like that.
Yeah.
No, they were glad to see me because I was there. So then we walk into the sanctuary and everyone's talking, which for me was odd because being raised Catholic, it's like, pin drop. Nobody ever says anything and it's quiet. And I was looking around thinking these people all act like they're getting ready to see a movie or something. They're all talking. And then a lady came out and she sat down at the piano and started playing and people began to worship the Lord and they weren't mumbling under their breath like I was used to when I was a kid at the Catholic Church. They were actually worshiping him with their heart. You could tell they really believe in him. they love him. And it was astounding. And during the first worship song, as they're worshiping, all of a sudden I began to feel odd inside, David, and I thought like I was going to cry. I didn't want anyone to see that. So I sat down in my pew and I put my face into my hands. And for the first time in my life, I sat there and I felt really bad for all the sins I had committed, all the bad things I had done. And what it was the Holy Spirit convicting me of my sin, showing me that I was a sinner in need of a Savior, namely Jesus Christ. And so while I'm being convicted of my sin, at the exact same time, I'm tasting His love and His holiness. And I'm astounded. God actually loves me. I didn't even love myself. I didn't even think my mother loved me. God loves me.
Yeah.
I remember that being the overriding thing. I sat in that pew with my face in my hands for an hour and a half and wept the entire time.
Wow.
I remember I looked up one time and people were just staring at me like, are you okay? And at the end, they had an altar call and they invited people to come up if they wanted to give their life to Christ. I didn't even go up. I already knew He had changed me, radically transformed me by the power of His Holy Spirit. Yeah. And so I decided at that time forward that I would live for Him. And that's what's happened. And that was a long time ago. I'm 65 now. That was when I was 17.
Wow.
So, yeah, Christ radically transformed my life.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want to be honest with you for a second about how an act of compassion really feels. A couple of years ago, I made the choice to partner with an amazing organization called Compassion International. Why? Because I wanted to sponsor a child in need. It was a nice idea, sure, but I had no idea just how much that simple act would change my life as well. I sponsored Nadia and got to watch her life change right in front of my eyes, going from starving literally alone on the streets to getting the health care and education she needs to reach her God-given full potential. I got to be a part of that change. And the light of that compassion not only illuminates in her, it illuminates now in me. That is the power of compassion. The light of Christ shines on all of us. Feel it for yourself and change literally a child's life. Change the world and you also change yourself. You can sponsor a child today. Visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
It's Bretzky. I don't know how they let me on this podcast, but while I'm here, I might as well tell you the only place to play blackjack, roulette, and live craps in Texas is SpinQuest.com, baby. That's SpinQuest.com. New users get a $30 coin package for only $10. I mean, that's a hell of a deal for all you 10-gallon hat wearers down there in Texas.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Wow. That is a powerful testimony. You know, Matt, I've said for the longest time, you know, and I when we see what's going on down in Venezuela, it's being justified with the war on drugs, and I've said for the longest time, you know, I have real issues with the government being involved in prohibition because, you know, it didn't work when they did it with alcohol, and alcohol is very harmful. I've said many times I would have supported that had I been back then, because it was so harmful. It's like, yeah, let's try it. And they did it legally. They actually, you know, amended the Constitution so they had the authority to do that. Very different situation with the war on drugs. It was just, and I think they called it, I honestly think they called it the war on drugs because they didn't want to use the term prohibition because it had been such a failure in terms of corruption of government and due process and creating gangs and all the rest of this stuff. And I've said for the longest time, and I've interviewed people who are law enforcement against prohibition, and they said, this is not something you're going to solve with force, with law enforcement. And I've said, this is a spiritual issue. And I tell you, your testimony really underscores the fact that it is, the drug war is really a spiritual war. And it's not something that you're going to fix with the police and the military. The answer to that is our society turning to Christ. That's what happened to you. And, so that's really what we need to focus on. And we try to take these shortcuts. Yeah. And we look at this and we say, well, we got this big, powerful military and we got this big, powerful police force. And so we got this hammer. Where's a nail that we can use against this, you know? And so that's how we get into these situations. When the reality is is that that's not the solution at all. All it does is give us other problems that we didn't have before, and it does nothing to fix. Here we are, 54 years into the war on drugs, and it's only gotten worse. We've got more intense forms of these drugs as well. But that's an amazing testimony about the failure of our society and the power of Christ to really fix these things. Yes. That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And something along the lines of what you're talking about, to just affirm what you're saying is so true, mm-hmm. is that in the 1970s, about the time I was in Teen Challenge, Detroit Teen Challenge, the Teen Challenge was actually brought under scrutiny by the federal government for fraudulent claims. Understand.
Really?
David. Oh, yeah.
This is when the government is running, the CIA is running drugs and all this stuff. So they come after Teen Challenge. Wow.
They go after Teen Challenge. And the average cure rate and a cure is a year after you're out of the program, you're still drug free. Mm-hmm. For secular programs, the average cure rate is 3 to 4%.
Wow.
96 to 97% of men and women who go into those programs are off drugs for 6 months, a year, whatever the length of the program is. Within a year, are back on drugs.
Mm.
Teen Challenge was claiming to have an 84% cure rate based on that same standard, 84%. So the federal government decides, oh, this is terrible. This gas has to be fraud. They had a commission that mm-hmm. took over. And so the commission was to investigate the fraud of Teen Challenge. The woman who headed up the commission was a black woman. I forget what state she was from. And she wrote a book after they were done with their investigation, which went on for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way they investigated was they actually met with these people who supposedly were changed. That was part of their investigation to determine whether they had an 84% cure rate. So after it was over, the federal commission determined that Teen Challenge actually was lying. They did not have an 84% cure rate. They had an 87%. And the woman who headed up the commission wrote a book called The Jesus Factor. And her whole book, and she ended up being one to Christ from interviewing all these men who were, you know, lives were ruined by drugs and now knew Jesus. She wrote a book called The Jesus Factor saying that is the that is why they have an 87% cure rate.
Wow.
So what you're saying is exactly true. The importance of us reaching out to people and sharing the gospel with people, pointing them to the Lord, talking to them about the things of God, because His Word addresses every area of life.
That's right. That's right.
So you can bring Him into just about any discussion.
Well, and it really comes back to, look at all the different problems that we've got. You know, the homes that are split up, which is, you know, the beginning of your problems there, and drugs, we have violence, and we have shootings, and all the rest of the stuff. What is the answer to all this? Why is this all happening? Because we've had these things before. We've had access, probably even more so, to guns in the past. We had access to guns in schools. What is the difference? I really think it is the Jesus factor. That's really the issue. We've turned away from Christ.
Absolutely.
Our society is rotten at the foundation, and that's why everything is collapsing on us, and that is the solution. You know, you're talking about when you were talking about your relative, and you said your mom asked your relative, who's your counselor? And it made me think of the Messiah this time of year, you know?
Yep.
Wonderful counselor.
Amen. Amen, out of Isaiah. Yep. Same thing.
Yep.
So, you know, I talk a lot about civil government matters because most churchmen don't. I wrote that book that you had mentioned earlier. And, but I tell everybody everywhere I speak and where I go, there's two things we need to do. We need to address our government from the Word of God. They need to be instructed in God's thinking regarding civil realm matters.
Yes.
And at the same time, we need to talk about Christ and point men to him. And so I have this little card that I always give out everywhere I go. It says, alone, arrested, in jail, I was living a life of emptiness, misery, robbery, arson, drugs, and hate. There had to be more to life than what I saw with my eyes, but what was it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like to draw them in. And on the other side, it says, my name is Matt. This is my story. And they have a little QR code with our the website, howjesuschangedmylife.com. And I get correspondence, David, from both unbelievers and believers who find the cards when I leave them around. And you never know how God's going to use that in people's life. And that's something we need to do. It's not an either or. It's not, oh, we either tell people about Jesus or we get involved in civil government things.
Yeah.
God's word speaks to every area of life.
That's right.
And so we need to talk about both things.
That's right. That's
Amen.
Right. Amen. Yeah. That's the thing, you know, when you have an amazing testimony like yours. I remember there was a young woman in a church once, and people were talking about their testimony. She said, I just grew up in church. I don't have anything to say. And she said, but then I realized one day that, God had saved me from all those things. He had saved me from them before I got into them. That's it too, you
Praise
know.
Lord. Amen.
That's been the case.
Exactly right.
That's been the case in America before. God saved us before we got into those things. But now we're in a situation as a culture where God can save us out of those things. And so that's why your testimony is so important. It really is. Again, the book is, Lesser Magistrate. And you can find it at Defy Tyrants. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Things have gotten really rough with me after I've had my stroke. I have so much trouble controlling my emotions. We're going to take a quick break.
Thank you for having me on, David.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. DefyTyrants.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, Her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, "I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going." Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
What's going on, Texas? It's Bluff here. Do you like playing casino-style games like blackjack, baccarat, craps, and slots? Well, SpinQuest.com, that's SpinQuest.com, has over 1,000 games available for you to play from the comfort of your own home. New players get $30 coin packages for only $10 and instant cash prize redemption. Now, what are you doing? Put that barbecue down, quit sweeping those tumbleweeds, and get to playing.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I wish I had the Christmas night album.
Hot dog!
You can get the Christmas night album at thedavidnightshow.com for just $13.99. It's right in the second floor there, see?
What'd you wish, George?
Well, not just one wish, a whole hatful. First, I'm going to thedavidnightshow.com and purchase the Christmas night album. Then I'm going to listen to Christmas classics, like... Are you going to throw it up?
I want the Christmas night album, too.
Hey, that's pretty good.
Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight?
Can't you come out tonight?
Can't you come out tonight?
David's Christmas night album includes 21 instrumental Christmas melodies like God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, Silent Night, and is all new I'll Be Home for Christmas.
What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it, pull it down.
I'll take it. Then what?
And then I'll buy you your own download of David Knight's Christmas Night album.
That brings us to something that Lance found that I thought was very interesting. And that is the brain interface transference here. That is a company that is called. Hang on a second, I'll get it right here.
Brain IT.
Brain IT is their thing, and they're not the only company that's doing this. There's a lot of different companies that are doing this, and let's show people what this really looks like. Scroll down and zoom in on those pictures. Now, there's pairs of pictures. And you'll see an image that the person is looking at. It says scene image. Right next to it is the reconstructed image. And look at that. There's a giraffe. And then right next to it is a giraffe. But the giraffe is standing in exactly the same position and same way and looked at from the same angle, looking so, kind of back over its shoulder.
To be clear, the scene image is what the human is looking at, and then there's sensors connected to the brain that's creating the reconstructed image. The computer hasn't seen this scene image. Only the human sees this, and this is entirely constructed from a brain scan.
That's right. So they can sense what you are looking at and completely reconstruct it. And look at how identical these images are. Now, you got a stop sign, and it got stop sign as well as the word stop. The only thing that's missing there is the four-way thing underneath it. It didn't quite reconstruct that exactly. And then when you look at the pieces of a pizza, it is a little bit more orderly in the way that it put the pizza together that's there. But even when it gets some of the details wrong, it still has the basic orientation there. Scroll it up a little bit, the snowboarder that is there. Take a look at the snowboarder. So here the basic orientation is right, even though the snowboarder has one leg up, the arms are still extended and still in basically the same orientation. It's going down the snow with a shadow that's being cast. But it is, it's truly amazing. Yeah, go, show the baseball one. That's another good one that's there. So the baseball thing, you got three different people, and they're all basically in the same orientation. The one, again, on the left is the actual picture that the human is looking at. The one on the right is a reconstruction by scanning his, by monitoring his brain, and then the computer is reconstructing that one on the right. And so you've got a catcher who is squatting and has got one arm extended out, and that is captured again. And then the umpire behind him who is in the same crouching position, even though the colors change a little bit. It still has that there. And then moving up to the room, the motel room, look at that. It even has the same color bedspread there. And the one above it, where you have the motorcycle, still in the, exactly the same angle, and it figured out there's a person on a racing motorcycle, even though it got the colors slightly different on that. It's truly, it's amazing.
Interesting to me, because it's little details that it gets wrong that if you were to remember this image, you would probably get a lot of these same details wrong, like exactly the color scheme of their clothes. But
that's right.
It still gets the general color scheme across all three of them.
Yeah, the three people saying there for the skiing thing. And again, the jet, a military jet, it gets a little bit of the details on the bottom that are different, but it basically has it all there. So it is pretty much getting the gist of it, just as Lance said, you would remember that when you come back. Now, what is interesting about this, I think, is the fact that it's not just one company that's doing this. There are at least 11, let's say a dozen companies that are out there. I bet you, we didn't look this up, but I bet you every single one of them has got grants from DARPA or some federal agency, most likely DARPA, in order to do this kind of stuff. You know, what is the use case for something like this? And how did they put it together? Well, this particular company is bragging about how superior their method is. They use fMRI, the MRI scanner that you have, they put you in the machine and you know, scan your brain and things like that. I had several of those done. This is functional MRI. And what it does, instead of looking at the structure of the brain and seeing, you know, are there physical alterations to the brain after a stroke or something like that, it looks at changes in the brain that are happening dynamically over time. And so that's what the functional MRI is about. Rather than looking at the physiology or the structure of the brain, it's actually looking at the dynamic brain activity. And so to train these models, one of the things that this company is bragging about is that they spend about an hour training it, and their competitors might spend 40 hours training it, and they get far superior results. It truly is amazing when you look at how long they spend training it and how much better their recognition is, you know, being able to sense what you are seeing and thinking about and basically reading your mind. And so it is the Brain Interaction Transformer. They call themselves BIT. Now, what they do, what is the training? Well, it turns out that everybody has these localized patch-level image features. And so they call them clusters, okay? And so they're looking at brain voxel clusters. And they say all humans have this, but these clusters will be located in different places on different subjects. Same thing, but it'll be slightly moved around. You know, when you have a stroke, they call it brain plasticity. And so when you have a stroke, part of your brain dies, and if you get the functionality back, it's because another part of your brain has taken up that activity. And they said, so some very, very young children, maybe in infancy, might have a stroke that would...
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options. No doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, "I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going." Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
It's Bretzky. I don't know how they let me on this podcast, but while I'm here, I might as well tell you the only place to play blackjack, roulette, and live craps in Texas is SpinQuest.com, baby. That's SpinQuest.com. New users get a $30 coin package for only $10. I mean, that's a hell of a deal for all you 10-gallon hat wearers down there in Texas.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Would affect, for example, their speech. And what they found is that even though that might reside on one side of their brain versus the other side of the brain, those young children, when they have the stroke that affects the side of the brain where normally speech would be, they found that as they learn to speak, the other side of their brain picks it up. And so that's what's called brain plasticity. In other words, it can adapt and train that other side of the brain to take over those functions. So that's what they're basically looking at here with these voxel clusters. They know that certain things are going to be fired. They just don't know exactly where that's going to be in a person's brain. So they spend an hour mapping those things out, and then they get very, very accurate results. And what they do is they split it into two different aspects. One of them is the semantics, and I think what that does is kind of give them a context. You know, so when you look at how, oh, you got two people standing and they're kind of standing in this particular orientation, picks up that, and then the other one is about more about the details that are there. And then they run these two different paths to get, so first they have programs that are looking at the voxel clusters, creating a kind of semantic context. The other one is creating a context for the features. And then they take the output of those two things and put them into something else that combines and sums those things together to give them that kind of image. It's pretty interesting in terms of technology that is there. But I think it is absolutely abhorrent that they're doing this. I can't think of any reason for them to do something like this. Now they'll come up with some kind of a fake justification, just like they're talking about with the creating babies with a hatchery. Oh, well, we'll do it to save people from some kind of genetic disease. And they're leaning into that excuse, leaning into that narrative by calling their company Preventive, right? But these are the kinds of things, you know, when we look at this, actually, you know, Lance, pull up the one that says, it's titled Brain Interaction Transformer. And when you look at that chart, you'll see that in their chart, when they're talking about the cross-transformer module, they've got that listed there twice, and guess what? They misspelled transformer. I'm being a little bit of a grammar Nazi here, but I got to just say that, you know, we're talking about things like this. The little details matter. And I wonder what happens when you switch some of the stuff and you're reconstructing things and it's a critical mission. I don't know.
To be honest, this sounds a lot more like a Decepticon ploy than the Transformers to me, but what do I know?
Yeah, it sounds pretty crazy to me. Look at one last one here, and that is comparing their images to these other models that are out there. Their company's called Brain IT, and they compare it to some other companies, Mind Turner, Mind I2, Neuro VLA. And so look at this.
We have the best mind reader on the market right now.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, you know, when you're...
The interesting one, I think, is the last one, the Neuro VLA, because it always gets the object correct, but it gets it in a very different context.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that first row there, you're seeing a bowl of some white stuff, maybe it's oatmeal or something, and you're seeing a banana right next to it. And then when you look at the Neuro VLA, they've got a bowl, and then they've got a banana, but it's not at all in the same orientation. And Brain IT was able to do that. And you see that repeated over and over again. They kind of get some of it, but they don't get all of it. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. What it reminded me of was this. Mr. Vinman from Ghostbusters.
Where? Good guess, but wrong.
Remember that from Bill Murray and the mind-reading thing that opened up Ghostbusters? I wonder if they shock these people who created these models or they get it wrong.
Tell me what you think it is.
Is it a star?
It is a star.
Very good. That's great.
And yet you can see from behind him that it wasn't.
Think hard.
Circle.
Close.
It's a square.
Definitely wrong. Okay. All right. Ready? What is it?
Figure eight.
Incredible. That's five for five. You can't see these, can you?
No.
You're not cheating.
Of course, that's not what it was.
No, I swear, they're just coming to me.
Okay. Nervous?
Yes. I don't like this.
You only have 75 more to go. Okay? What's this one?
It's a couple of wavy lines.
Sorry.
You got it right.
Lucky day. get a little tired of this.
You volunteered, didn't you? We're paying you, aren't we?
Yeah, but I didn't know you were going to be giving me electric shocks. What are you trying to prove here anyway?
I'm studying the effect of negative reinforcement on ESP ability.
The effect? I'll tell you what the effect is. It's pissing me off.
Well, then maybe my theory is correct.
You can keep the $5. I've had it.
I will, mister.
Keep the $5. Yeah, I wonder what they pay these people to go through an hour of MRI.
It's the kind of resentment that your ability is going to provoke in some people.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's kind of interesting. But now they're doing it for real, okay? They're going to use AI to read people's minds. And again, when they list out a table and they compare themselves percentage-wise to these other people, you see that there are 11 of these companies that are out there doing this stuff. And who is paying them? I bet it is some evil organization like... Is it all just about the winning? When we look at this, is winning everything and the only thing? No, I don't think that's the case. We really need to have meaningful moral reform.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, "I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going." Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know, there's an excellent article, and I've talked about William Wilberforce in the past, but there's an excellent article talking about what he wrote in 1807 when he stopped the slave trade. And we're not going to go through all the details of it, but just to make you aware of it. It was called A Letter on the Abolition of the Slave Trade by William Wilberforce. It was published less than a month before the British Parliament voted overwhelmingly to abolish the slave trade. And it encapsulates two decades of relentless effort by Wilberforce. One historian aptly described that parliamentary vote as, quote, one of the turning events in the history of the world. And it was. Slavery has always existed, at every time and in every culture. But it was William Wilberforce who single-handedly started to turn this tide. And he did it because of his Christian principles. And that's the point of this article. To talk about how effective and how necessary it is for Christians to hold to those principles. It's not just about winning. It's not about that at all. The whole reason he did this fight, and understand, take the biggest things that are out there. This is like one guy taking on all of the technocracy, or one guy taking on all of the oil industry, or all the military-industrial complex, or all the pharmaceutical, or roll those all together. Big pharma, big food, the military-industrial complex, roll those all together. That was slavery at the time in his country. He took all that on and he won. And he won because he stood on principle. Wilberforce's work is not merely historical, it provides a timeless model for how Christians can and should engage in public life. It calls us to integrate faith, reason, and courage into our engagement with public policy. Wilberforce's approach to public policy was unapologetically grounded in Christian morality. By the way, this article is from Christian Post. He spoke boldly as a Christian in Parliament, addressing his nation's accountability to God. Even in a society that might appear more receptive to Christian values than our own, such declarations were not always welcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even in Britain at that time, which is far more accepting of Christian values than America is now. Wilberforce begins and ends with a solemn warning. He said the slave trade was an abominable evil that placed the British Empire under the judgment of God. His moral clarity cut through the political expediency, challenging his contemporaries to see the slave trade not as an economic necessity, but as a profound moral failing. Same thing is true of abortion today, isn't it? And so many other issues. We always have culture is downstream from religion, and politics is downstream from culture. Wilberforce paired his moral convictions with meticulous research and evidence. He often spent 14 hours a day studying and gathering facts about the slave trade, a pace that he eventually moderated for the sake of his health. The rigorous preparation, though, allowed him to systematically counter every objection raised by his opponents. Folks, if you don't read, you can't lead. You got to lead with the facts, especially if you're going to do things in the name of truth, in the name of morality, and do things in the name of God. You got to lead with the truth, and you got to know what that is. In his letter on the abolition of the slave trade, Wilberforce methodically dismantled pro-slavery arguments, presenting a case so thorough, so compelling, that it could not be ignored. His work underscores the importance of combining moral passion with intellectual precision and a lot of hard work, right? He said, it's not enough to simply declare what is right. We have to also engage in reasoned, evidence-based advocacy. Whether the issue is religious freedom, the sanctity of life, or justice for the marginalized, we must be prepared to make our case with clarity and convictions for us today. He faced fierce opposition from powerful interests tied to the slave trade and to colonial economies, and at one point he was challenged to a duel by a slave ship captain, and he received multiple death threats, yet he pressed on with unwavering determination. Wilberforce confronts his opponents head-on in this in his book, arguing that the abolition of the slave trade would ultimately benefit the economy. He declared that even if economic losses occurred, the moral imperative to end, quote, the most enormous crime of slavery outweighed everything else. You know, we have to understand, and the founders of this country understood, that prosperity, like liberty, are a blessing from God. And that should be our first concern. Our first concern should be to seek God's blessing. And that means that we follow the principles that he laid out. As I say here in the Christian Post, for Christians today, engaging in public life often means standing against cultural tides, enduring criticism, and hostility. Wilberforce's example challenges us to speak the truth in love, regardless of the cost. Transformational change is possible when Christians engage the public square with conviction and perseverance. That is the legacy that was taught to us by William Wilberforce.
That's right, boys and girls. There's a post-election sale on silver and gold. Trump euphoria has caused a dip in silver and gold. And it's time to buy some metals with fiat dollars before they come to their cents. Is go to davidknight.gold to get in touch with the wise wolf himself, Tony Arterburn. He knows where to look to find silver and gold. Woohoo!
Yark! Fiat!
Welcome back, and joining us now is a filmmaker and evangelist, Judd Saul, and his organization is Equipping the Persecuted. You can find the website at equippingthepersecuted.org, and that is the main site, and from that they have set up another site that's focused strictly on what is happening in Nigeria, because that there's so much that is happening there. It's called truthinnigeria.com. And so you can find out what is happening there. We wanted to get it straight from Judd. Judd, tell us a little bit about this. I see that you went in 2011 and you first saw what was happening there. And that's 14 years this has been going on now. But tell us what you saw that got you activated.
Well, what I saw that got me activated, so I went first to Nigeria with my grandfather, who's an evangelist and wanted to heard stories about Nigeria, wanted to go help serve on the mission. And when I got there, people were telling us about these attacks that have been going on against them in their communities. And I personally saw the aftermath of some of these attacks when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it always just like, it just struck me to my core.
Yeah, I bet.
I was like, and I kept on asking questions. I was like, what are people doing about this?
Mm-hmm.
What are other missionaries? Are there any other organizations doing something about this? What can be done? So over the years, I kept on serving with this other mission I was working with. But then in 2019, I started equipping the persecuted because, frankly, I'd had enough. Mm-hmm. I've talked to pastors and other missionaries and other people there. And I said, what if we created an organization that actually wants to stop the persecution? What if we had an organization that trained village security teams? Mm-hmm. What if we had an organization that responds to these attacks within 48 hours? Mm-hmm. And they said, we need this yesterday. When can we start? So that's what started equipping the persecuted. Because I looked around and I saw that very few people were actually trying to do something about the situation. A lot of people talking, but no action on the ground.
That's right. Because the government doesn't want to stop this. I mean, the government is kind of a silent partner in all this, from what I've been able to see. Is that correct? Would you say the government there?
There was President Goodluck Jonathan, who was Christian, that was trying to use Nigerian resources to fight Boko Haram and fight the Fulani terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happened was, when Obama came into office, he then started sending Democrat operatives to Nigeria to get Muslim presidents elected over Christian presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And when you saw the Muslim presidents take over, you saw the killing increase exponentially.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I guess, he was appropriately named Goodluck Jonathan. I'm going to stop the Muslims killing Christians. Good luck, Jonathan. Well, yes. Sorry.
No, so, you know, so what's been going on is before it would be like you'd have a Christian president, Muslim president, Christian vice president. But in the last three presidential terms, what you've had is a Muslim ticket.
Mm.
And the government has been laying cover for the terrorists and turning a blind eye to the killing.
Wow.
And pretending it doesn't exist.
Wow. And so that was Obama's influence. And so you could have a positive influence as well from the U.S., but that's not there. I want to focus more on what you actually do in terms of equipping the persecuted. I heard you talk about emergency response teams, talking about village security. Tell us a little bit about those things.
So currently the Nigerian government, you have the police, you have the military, which are all nationalized. They're all run by the Nigerian government.
Mm-hmm.
But what the Nigerian government did do is recognize village security teams. They're called vigilante. Now, vigilante in the U.S. has a negative connotation, but the word vigilante has a positive connotation in Nigeria. And so these are people that are from their local villages that get together to defend their villages or the first line of defense. But they get no arms, they get no training, they get no funding. And we've taken it upon our ministry to come alongside them and say, you know what? We'll give you some training. How about we give you some radios, mm-hmm. some locally sourced bulletproof vests,
mm-hmm.
things mm-hmm. that you can do to try to help defend your village. We can't get in the arms business, but what we can do is come alongside them and give them training and some basic materials to help save lives.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. What we call that here in the U.S., instead of vigilantes, we would call it a posse. But of course, they would be armed in order to be able to do something about it. And that is not allowed there, I understand. And certainly your organization could not provide that. What about a quick response team after something like this has happened? Of course, that's going to be medical care and other things.
Yeah. So what happens is, you know, the Fulani come in. Let's say it's a town of 1,000, 1,500. They'll come in, start shooting, start funneling people in and kill as many as they can. But then you have a lot of survivors.
Mm-hmm.
that are no longer allowed to return from their to their homes because the Fulani have decimated everything. Mm-hmm. They've burned the houses down. They chopped down all the crops. They raise everything.
Wow. Wow.
And then all these people are put into these camps. Well, they don't have any food. They don't have any clothing. They don't have any shelter. And so we try to, within 48 hours, is deploy food, aid, and medicine within these attacks. And many times we come across a lot of wounded victims that haven't been treated.
Mm-hmm.
People that have had bullets in their arms and in their bodies for over 48 hours that need medical care and surgery. And we come alongside, pay for those medical costs, and try to help the wounded.
Wow. Wow. That's very important. You know, we get frustrated because it's like, you know, nobody's talking about this, and certainly nobody's doing anything about it. And, you know, it is somewhat difficult. I'm sure that there's levers that could be pulled if Trump wanted to do anything about it. But the U.S. government typically doesn't. Now, Obama did. When you look at these people they push, they push the Muslims in there, but is there also a Marxist component to this as well?
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweets coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's mostly just Muslims.
I would say there's a hint of that creeping in, a little nationalized things, do that, but I see more of traditional Islam 101, dominance is what's driving this force. Mm-hmm. Now, the Nigerian government lately has been very cozy to the Chinese. While the Biden administration and the U.S. government's turned a blind eye to Nigeria on a lot of things, the Chinese are filling that void, providing a lot of money. They're sending in some of their politics in, but they're also capitalizing on, I would say, on the crisis, because what we're seeing now is Chinese mines sprouting up on what were once Christian lands. And they're illegally mining, and, you know, the terrorists aren't killing the Chinese because they're probably taking some money on the back end for allowing the Chinese to mine in these areas.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. I just see that just recently, this is on the on Saturday the 25th, Christians are urged to pray as an American missionary pilot, Kevin Rideout, was abducted in Niger. This is very dangerous work that you do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're praying for that pilot. I have some friends that are within that missions organization, and I called them and asked them about that specific situation. And so far, there's been no ransom asked for. What we think is happening is that they kidnapped him, and they're using the pilot to do things for them. They don't want to ransom him out. They want to essentially turn him into a slave for doing what their work is. That's what I'm hearing on the ground.
Oh, okay.
Because there has been no ransom called yet for that gentleman. And it's very dangerous. We have to travel with armed security wherever we go in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
We have armed security teams. And we know, especially now, I've been speaking out against what's going on in Nigeria publicly. You know, there's more of a risk there. But we go by God's grace and his mercy and protection.
Well, good for you. That's fearless. And that's what people of faith should be fearless. I played the clip before you came on of a pastor there, and we've seen so many videos on social media of the mass funerals that are being held with all the bodies that are there, because the killing has been just astounding. And is it increasing, or how would you characterize it recently?
Oh, no, the killings increased this year. Mm-hmm. Before, it would be between 4,000 to 5,000 Christians killed per year.
Wow.
But this year, since January 1, there's been over 7,000 Christians that have been killed.
Wow.
The attacks are ramping up, and the Nigerian government turning a blind eye to it, or I would just say they're complicit, and the mainstream media is laying cover for it as well.
Wow. Yeah, it absolutely is a case of genocide, and of course that's what Bill Maher said, and he was right. We've been talking about it here as well, but yeah. They're very selective about what they're concerned about. And as we see, you mentioned China coming in there. We see all the time people would talk about what the Chinese are doing to the Muslim Uyghurs that are there, or they talk about what they're doing to the Falun Gong. But rarely do they talk about what's being done to the Christians in China. And so, you know, China, this is par for the course for China, coming in, as you point out, in Nigeria, doing a deal with the government and putting mines on the land of the Christian villagers who have been killed and their homes have been destroyed and that type of thing. It's truly amazing. Tell us what else you are involved in outside of Nigeria, or is there more that you want to talk about with Nigeria?
Well, primarily my full-time work since 2019 has been focused on Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And in trying to raise awareness but also help the people on the ground. Mm-hmm. We got one of the figures that I haven't pointed out to you is that there's between 3.5 million and 5 million Christians that have been removed from their homes that are living in camps.
Wow.
That are suffering from disease, starvation, and just awful, awful conditions. And they haven't been able to return back to their homes because the Fulani Muslim terrorists have squatted on their land, and if these Christians go back, they get killed.
Wow. That is amazing. Yeah, the Republicans are not interested in this. Of course, the Democrats were, in terms of equipping the Muslims to do this kind of persecution, but the Republicans are just, looking elsewhere with all this. Truly is amazing.
We are gaining a little headway with Republicans, but we're fighting a war of narratives.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are people, there are some in the Republican Party that are capitalizing they don't want to solve the problem. I think they're capitalizing on the back end. And we have other Republicans that are coming up and calling for U.S. intervention on behalf of persecuted Christians in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. But there is a battle and a war of words and a war of narratives we're fighting against. Mm-hmm. And there is a genocide against Christians in Nigeria. We have some Republicans and the Democrats obviously repeating Muslim talking points from Nigeria that there is no crisis, there is no genocide. It's bandits or these unknown gunmen. Everybody refuses to name who's doing the killing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Muslims right. Killing Christians.
Yeah. Well, of course, as my producer says, we're too busy blowing up boats to worry about Christians being genocided. That's, I guess...
Yeah.
What's happening here? We have our different areas that we're interested in, and we have our areas that we have some financial interest in. China, of course, is taking an interest in it. They're looking at getting minerals out of this area. Yes. But my producer also says, what about providing them with 3D printers where they could make their own weapons? Of course, they'd have to have electricity. Do they have electricity in these villages?
No, that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like, we have solutions, but they don't have the power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't have the power source to be able to do these things. Power, especially in these areas, they're lucky. If there is a line run to their communities, they're lucky it runs 10% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're lucky to have power maybe 10% of the time. The rest is just blackout. It's awful.
Wow. Talk to me as an evangelist. I mean, what is it like talking to somebody in an area where there's this kind of a persecution for becoming a Christian? I mean, that's like a death sentence. I would imagine that'd be a pretty big obstacle to overcome when you're talking to somebody about Christ.
Well, actually, it's not as hard as you think, because when you have people that already live in abject poverty and then everything getting totally taken away from them, you come in meeting the needs presented mm-hmm. with the gospel. People are very willing to hear and they accept it. And the Christians that are murdered for their faith, that refuse to convert to Islam, have a real sense of Christianity that I wish most Americans couldn't understand.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
where they get up in the morning thanking God, thank you for allowing me another breath today, thank you for allowing me to live, mm-hmm. and they get up going, Lord, we're relying on you for sustenance. They have no choice but to rely on God, but they stay faithful to the end. Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps me motivated, keeps me coming back. Mm-hmm. And that testimony actually really, it makes it easy to share the gospel with these people. And even the ones that are nominal, not fully saved, we've even seen Muslims come to know Christ because they've seen our kindness. They've seen how we treat one another.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just 10 bucks. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
We come to care for them. Mm-hmm. And we see many Muslims come to know Christ through this mission just because we're shining a light into the darkness.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, we have this life of comfort, which is not conducive to a Christian life, really. It's, you know, when we're struggling with hardship, that makes Christ so much more precious, and we see him working in different ways in our life like that. And that is something that many people in the West, the affluence gets in the way of us being able to see that. And when you're living hand to mouth like that, you really can see it. Do they speak English?
Most of them do. The educated Nigerians speak English. You have a lot of people in the rural communities that only have their tribal language that they know. Mm-hmm. They know some English, but majority of the country does speak English.
Mm-hmm. So what about Bibles and things like that? Most of it is done in English, or do you have it in the tribal languages as well?
We have it in English, but then we have Bibles printed in, I say, their dominant tribal language. So a lot of the area we work in is Hausa. Mm-hmm. And so we have Bibles printed in Hausa that we give to these people. Hmm. And then Fulani Muslim converts that convert to Christianity, we have the Bible printed in their language and given to them. And so, you know, with technology and the way things are, we're able to get the Bible translated into several different tribal languages, and we get them out there. But if they know English, we give them an English Bible. If they don't, we give them a Bible in their translation.
Talk to us a little bit about the Fulani tribesmen. Of course, I see that phrase all the time, but you know, where are these people coming from? Are they Nigerian, or are they coming from another area trying to take over areas of Nigeria? What's going on with the Fulani? Another Muslim?
The Fulani are not indigenous to Nigeria. Mm-hmm. They're coming from way up North Africa, from the Sahel. So Niger, Chad, they're nomadic herders, mm-hmm. and they've worked their way south and going into Nigeria, and wherever these guys end up, they end up taking territory, killing, and continuing to gain political power. They're a conquering tribe, but they do it through Islam. I used to call it, they start with cultural jihad, where they move in, they become neighbors, they do business, kids go to school together. Then when they get the population and the political power, then they start the killing. And then they keep working their way further south and doing that. And so they're not indigenous to Nigeria. They're an invading tribe.
That seems to be an established pattern for Muslim conquest, isn't it? You know, coming in and gradually, as you start to accumulate your numbers, you come in peacefully at first. Talk about Boko Haram, and of course we've heard about them for quite some time, attacking and kidnapping girls out of schools because they don't want girls reading anything or getting educated. But give us an idea of where they're coming from and what they're about.
Well, so Boko Haram are also Fulani.
Oh, it's the same thing.
They're Fulani. There's, you know how radical Islam, they have different groups that sprout up. So one is not as hardcore as the other one in their Islam, and they have rival groups. So you have ISIS of West Africa, you have Boko Haram, but they're all Fulani. And they practice a Sunni Wahhabiist form of Islam, which is a very radical Saudi Arabian form of Islam.
Right.
And then, you know, they kind of battle it out here and there. But then the Fulani that aren't necessarily affiliated with ISWAP or Boko Haram still coordinate together to go kill and take over more territory.
Wow. So the Wahhabis.
Sometimes they have their they have their little spats, you know, one's not as radical as the other, so we got to fight each other over here, but they still systematically conquer as they go.
Yeah. Wow. So Wahhabists, not the Sunnis or the Shias, but they're more like the Saudis. So imagine a lot of the Sharia law with beheadings and mutilation over theft and all the rest of the stuff that is there, as well as the putting hoods on women and all the rest of this. So so how can people support you? They can go to the website and they can get information about what you're doing and how they can support you.
Yeah, you can go to equippingthepersecuted.org, partner with our organization. We need all the help we can get. Like I said, our resources are, the need is great. Resources are small. We're doing everything we can to help out our persecuted brothers and sisters. And then if you want information, up-to-date news on what's going on in Nigeria, go to truthnigeria.com.
Well, I really appreciate what you're doing, and it really is important. I mean, there is, other than, you know, talking to politicians and complaining about what politicians are doing or not doing, you are actually getting in there and helping the people who have been attacked, who have been, you know, families that have been physically attacked, the people have been shot, give them medical care to help to rebuild their houses, I guess, as well as part of that. And that is really a key thing. And, of course, equipping them with a kind of a warning system, since they're not allowed to defend themselves in that country. But thank you so much for what you're doing. And, again, truthnigeria.com and equippingthepersecuted.org are the places where people can find out about what you're doing there. Before you leave, though, you're a filmmaker, so do you have a documentary about this that you have done?
So we've put out a few we're working on putting it together, a series of mini documentaries about certain subjects in Nigeria. We put out one a few months ago called The Father's Day Massacre, which was an attack that took place in June in Benue, Nigeria, on Father's Day, where 280 Christians were slaughtered. Half of them were burned alive. The other half that weren't burned alive were shot and hacked to death with machetes trying to escape the fires.
Oh, that's horrific.
And that was a very significant moment that we decided we needed to do a, you know, cover and show that, show how horrific that attack was, to let people know that this persecution is real.
Wow.
And it's not just about banditry and farmer herder conflict, that this is a real genocide. And we put that out in June. It's called The Father's Day Massacre.
Wow.
And then before that, I've done political.
And where can people find that? Is that on YouTube or is it something?
It's right on our website, equippingthepersecuted.org.
All right, good. Yes. Well, it truly is amazing. And, you know, before you came in, I played the one guy who was talking about, well, 100 years, we won't know anything at all, but Christ knows what they have done.
it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, "I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going." Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
My name is Brian Hooker, and I'm the Chief Scientific Officer for Children's Health Defense. And I want to talk to you about an important initiative of CHD called the COVID Index. This is the information that the powers that be did not want you to see. This web repository refutes the narrative, the official narrative regarding COVID-19. It has a very, very comprehensive, easy-to-use search engine, so you can search readily and also get direct excerpts from every entry in the COVID index. There's so much information out there that needs to be curated, and this is a place where it has been done and is being done continuously. So I highly recommend that you check out this resource at www.covidindex.science.
All right, welcome back. And that was a little introductory video that you'll find at that site, covidindex.science. I didn't even know they had a dot science. I guess they did that in honor of Fauci. It'd be interesting to get the domain name, iam.science. But joining us now is Dr. Brian Hooker. He's the Chief Scientific Officer at Children's Health Defense, formerly the Department Chair and Professor Emeritus of Biology at Simpson University. And I have been following his very valuable research and the very valuable things that Children's Health Defense had through this massive pandemic MacGuffin that we always talk about. And it's good to, you know, we can look at this stuff. And we can understand the motivations of these people, and we can sanity check it. But it's important to have the scientific information that's there as well. And that's what Dr. Hooker provides. You know, it was actually Children's Health Defense, and I think ICON, that when they sued the CDC, the CDC is part of the vaccine holding them not responsible for any damage that they did to the kids. I forget the exact name of it. The 1986 Act. And right. You probably know what that is, Dr. Hooker. What is that? What's the name of that official act?
It's called the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, and it yes. set up the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. Yes. And the program was up and running in about 1989.
And they were supposed to be tracking as part of that agreement. They were supposed to track the adverse events and to make recommendations and so forth. And so I remember RFK Jr. and Del Bigtree at ICON asked them, you know, we'd like to see your records and see what recommendations you have made and so forth and so on. They stalled and stalled and stalled and wouldn't comply with it. Finally, they had a judge that forced them to give the information. And you could see that for 30-plus years they had not been concerned about any of this stuff. They'd kept no records at all. And so it's very important when we come into this, if we understand what the priorities of these people are, that it's not your health, that it's the profits of the corporations and the revolving door that is there, that's an important thing to start with. But what Dr. Hooker has provided is beyond that, and it gives us the tools that we need in order to try to help educate people. And they've got a new resource now, covidindex.science. So with that long introduction, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate you coming on today.
Well, you're very welcome. And I'm excited that Children's Health Defense is hosting COVIDindex.science.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about love, generosity, and compassion. We say those words all the time, and they sound good. They feel good. But here's the truth. Those words don't mean anything unless they turn into action. And right now, not later today, not tomorrow, there's a child in the world who doesn't know if they'll eat, if they'll have a chance to learn, or if there's any hope at all. And while we're all busy, life keeps moving forward, but that child is waiting. This is where you come in. With Compassion International, you have the chance to change a child's future. Not just with words, not with promises, but with real help that provides food, education, and hope through local churches and people already in their community. Put your words into action and join me. Introduce a child to a loving Heavenly Father today at compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
It's Bretzky. I don't know how they let me on this podcast, but while I'm here, I might as well tell you the only place to play blackjack, roulette, and live craps in Texas is SpinQuest.com, baby. That's SpinQuest.com. New users get a $30 coin package for only $10. I mean, that's a hell of a deal for all you 10-gallon hat wearers down there in Texas.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It is such an amazing repository of information of all things around the COVID era and now what's going on in the post-COVID era. You know, the mess that was created by the whole pandemic needs to be cleaned up. And that's, you know, the fallout. We're continuing to see publications come out, and publications that we feel are bad or fraudulent, that are not good science. We want to make sure that those are critiqued in the COVID index, and then also the good science that's coming out, so people will know, you know, what's going on with things like remdesivir, hospital protocols, the vaccine, the therapies that work that have been disparaged, like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and vitamin D3 and zinc. And, you know, so we've got sort of a historical basis, and we've built this edifice of information, and it's a living, database. We're always updating the COVID index. So when things come out, then we can feature the new information and some of the information pouring out, like ties to things like autism, as well as neurodevelopmental disabilities for individuals that got the shot in pregnancy. Is and also, you know, one of the things that practitioners are talking about are turbo cancers. We're seeing so many turbo cancers that we believe that the vaccine played a role in either causing that cancer or hastening the growth of that cancer.
Yes, I remember. And I remember pathologist Dr. Ryan Cole talking in the spring of 2021 as it was really starting to roll out in a large way. He said, I'm looking at patients and I'm seeing that it's damaging their killer T cells. And he goes, and that's when I first heard the term turbo cancer, I think. He was talking about that. He said it's really going to cause that to explode because that's your body's first defense against cancer cells, the killer T cells. And so I guess the question, first question I would have for you, what about people who got the shots? Many of the listeners have, hopefully they haven't gotten it, but perhaps they have a family or friends who have. What types of things, is there, are there going to be resources there at covidindex.science that would help people who have been exposed to this pathogen?
Yes. There are resources on recovery from COVID vaccine injury. That is a part of the database. And I would also encourage those individuals that are suffering and they really don't know where to go, because so many practitioners either don't acknowledge that it happens or they'll throw up their hands and say, I have no idea what to do. So I would encourage those individuals to email us at info@childrenshealthdefense.org and ask that question directly. You know, I can't really recommend practitioners, you know, in an interview or in that particular setting, but at least we can let people know what practitioners are in the area or what practitioners are especially are specializing in those types of cancers or in those types of difficulties. Like, you know, long COVID vaccine injury is extremely prevalent. A lot of people are having symptoms that are similar to fibromyalgia that either got COVID or got the COVID shot, and we're finding circulating spike protein in these individuals that got the COVID shot for upwards to 2 years after they got their last vaccine. So things can be done, and things need to be done.
Yes, I had an interview years ago with a an injured orthopedic surgeon who could no longer work because his hands were shaking. And he kept going to fellow physicians, and you know, as soon as he would say he thought it was a vaccine injury, and this is what they would just basically, I can't help you. You know, they would run away. It just tells us so much about the state of medicine right now, doesn't it? Even to the extent that he finally went to somebody, and the guy said, "All right, I've got some things here that I think will help you, but we're not going to talk about what caused it." I mean, that kind of fear is like a totalitarian Stalinesque state. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that Solzhenitsyn talked about in the Soviet Union.
It is. And, you know, we were so fortunate. California had a bill to actually codify that so physicians and providers could not deviate from the standard of care. They could not talk about things that were outside of, like, remdesivir or Paxlovid or monopulvenir that were the sort of, you know, patented technologies that were going to give the most money, you know, to government scientists. And so they could not deviate from that line. They could never talk about ivermectin. That bill passed, but fortunately it was overturned by a court decision. and the bill, the California legislature withdrew it. But many practitioners do not know that they have the freedom to be able to deviate from the standard of care. Many are afraid, you know, because of individuals that have been persecuted, that have lost their certifications, things like that. But, you know, quite honestly, I know the practitioners that have gone through the persecution, that have lost their certifications, they fight back, they win. So many of them are still in practice today. And I'm glad for people like Ryan Cole, for Peter McCullough, for Pierre Corey, that have really fought the system and are still seeing patients, treating patients, and doing a lot of good.
That's great. Yeah. It is horrific to look at how corrupt the system is. And, of course, they got a lot of different ways that they can come after you. I'm pretty sure it was a Children's Health Defense article where they were talking about how the insurance companies will come after the pediatricians who don't follow the vaccine schedule and get a certain percentage of their children vaccinated on schedule. They will basically cut across the board what they will pay these pediatricians and basically put them out of practice. Even if you don't get some review board to pull their license, they can pull that economic trick on you. I think that was from Children's Health Defense.
They have done that, and they threaten that all the time. We were able to get the incentive program for one of the largest HMOs in the United States, and it was Anthem Blue Cross. And what we found was that pediatricians stood to make over $500,000 a year if 63% or more of their pediatric practice was fully vaccinated. They could get $600 per patient if they had 1,000 patients that were fully vaccinated. That was $600,000, and that was a yearly incentive. Yeah. So, you know, those individuals that have been fired from pediatric practices because they haven't been following the vaccine schedule, that's why. It has nothing to do with health. It has everything to do with a pediatrician on the take.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, we look at the whole COVID thing. I was absolutely amazed. I remember it was in August of 2020. The American Hospital Association was saying, wait a minute, you told us you're going to give us a 20% bonus, and now you're telling us that we got to give you our PCR tests? You told us at the beginning that you didn't have enough of them and that they didn't work anyway.
Right.
This is amazing. You know, I've been shouting about that now for 5 years, and people just don't realize how they use financial strings to get their way with people, and how they were financially incentivizing people. So you just point at them and say they got COVID, $9,000. You put them on a ventilator, we're going to give you $39,000. We'll give you a 20% bonus on everything that you do if you say this person has COVID. I mean, the whole thing was bought and paid for, wasn't it?
It really was. And that, you know, there was sort of an economic dearth right during the shutdown, because they were shutting down hospitals and taking elective surgeries and things like that and telling them to stay home. So then they waived these incentive programs come, you know, July, August of 2020 to the providers, to the hospitals, and really, you know, forced them into a situation where many of them just had to go along. You know, let's diagnose COVID. Let's diagnose, you know, we're not going to give effective therapies. We really want to put people on ventilators because they got more money for ventilated patients and that were in ICU. And so that forced many, many more patients into that whole system where they got worse and worse and worse. And I think a lot of them, David, died of bacterial pneumonia, but they, yes, you know, they were never tested for the, you
I
know,
agree. I agree.
Presence of bacteria, and they were allowed to die. It was just a crying shame, and people should go to jail over this.
Yes, yes, putting people on the ventilator and that type of thing. We have Grace Sherrod's case, and they're reopening that again, and that was another one of these cases, just basically hospital murder, put a do not resuscitate and put her on a ventilator. I wanted to ask you a couple of things, because there's been some disappointment with, on my part and as well as, a lot of, my listeners with what's going on with MAHA. Disappointed that the mRNA jab is, still there. I mean, we've had the process, and I understand there's a lot of inertia here. I understand there's a real political fight there. And I kind of watched this as it's been developing in Florida with Joseph Latipo there. First they came back and they said, well, We don't recommend it, you know, but, you know, if you get it, you can go ahead and get it. But they're not going to ban it. And they're gradually moving into that, you know, first saying we don't recommend it. We're not going to force anymore, but now we strongly do not recommend it. But they won't actually come in with a ban on this kind of stuff. And it's so frustrating because we have seen in the past when a handful of people died over a vaccine or over a medicine, they would pull it. And that is not happening now. They will pull it if you got a couple of children who die because of a faulty baby crib. They pull all of them off the market. But they don't do that with this. And so the question is, you know, what is happening? Why don't we see a ban of the mRNA? And, of course, what Latipo has moved to is to say that, now pointing out the fact there's a lot of DNA contamination in the vaccines, and say this is something that should cause you to pull this off the market, but it's not. And so at what point do you think this is going to happen, or is it going to happen?
I want it to happen desperately. You know, we have things that are not on the open market that are not sold or distributed ever because they're poisons. We call them poisons. And so when you look at the mRNA shot, it is pure poison. It is basically, you know, and people, unfortunately, are up in arms that they want their COVID boosters. They want their COVID boosters. I know people personally that are on their seventh or eighth booster. Wow. And they are addicted to these things. And you wonder, like, well, why are you still around? Because they are so, so toxic. And we've seen so many people affected. You know, I believe that in the United States, easily, if the calculations were done, we'd see over 1 million people who have died because of the COVID shot. But the HHS has been dragging its heels. And I think that part of it is, you know, the more the administration end of it and not the HHS end of it, because I know, you know, I know Secretary Kennedy. I worked with Secretary Kennedy for, you know, 12 years before he became Secretary Kennedy. And it is his heart and his plan to be able to get rid of that technology, because it never should have been rolled out. People knew historically that that type of technology was bad news, and it was a grand medical experiment, you know, basically a big clinical trial that was head up by Tony Fauci, and it should have never happened. That man belongs in jail. You know, we're pushing as hard as we can push, and honestly, there are people on the inside of HHS that are rooting for us and saying, no, push harder, because we have this behemoth of an organization that doesn't want to change. We have deep state people in HHS that don't want to change. So we need more pressure.
And of course, when we look at this, I think we really dodged a bullet there with Susan Monterez being taken out of the CDC. And, you know, she was somebody who was at BARDA and ARPA-H and very focused on mRNA plus AI. And we know that Trump was pushing that on, like, his first day in office with Stargate. He had Larry Ellison there saying, yeah, we're going to do an AI assessment of you and we'll custom make an mRNA thing there. So I was very concerned as to what was going to happen there. And, of course, that's created a lot of pushback against RFK. And they said, well, you just fired her because of a personal disagreement or something, you know, insubordination, because he wanted some of these other people fired, and she said, no, I'm not going to fire them. And so he fired her. What do you know about that? Do you think that that he gets that he's pushing back against the mRNA that's basically being put out there for everything? I mean, we had at USDA with this administration, with the Trump administration, we had Brooke Rollins, who, with all this bird flu insanity and the mass culling of chickens, so far that was happening with Biden, her big solution was, well, we'll give the mRNA bird flu shot to all the chickens, and then that'll be fine. And as also to the cattle and to the pigs as well, right, all of our food supply. And so she has the authority to approve that for agricultural issues. But on the other side, the mRNA things that are there, especially when you combine it with artificial intelligence, very, very concerning. What do you know about the what's going on with Monterez and the rest of the stuff? When you talk about deep state, I mean, that's what I think of as BARDA and ARPA-H and these insidious programs that are out there. It seems like There's a lot of people in the Trump administration. Trump is working with Larry Ellison, and of course, Brooke Rollins is in on all that as well. What's your take on that?
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want to be honest with you for a second about how an act of compassion really feels. A couple of years ago, I made the choice to partner with an amazing organization called Compassion International. Why? Because I wanted to sponsor a child in need. It was a nice idea, sure, but I had no idea just how much that simple act would change my life as well. I sponsored Nadia and got to watch her life change right in front of my eyes, going from starving literally alone on the streets to getting the health care and education she needs to reach her God-given full potential. I got to be a part of that change, and the light of that compassion not only illuminates in her, it illuminates now in me. That is the power of compassion. The light of Christ shines on all of us. Feel it for yourself and change literally a child's life. Change the world, and you also change yourself. You can sponsor a child today. Visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Well, not all that glitters is gold, even in HHS. And so, you know, by Susan Monterez being fired and then other, you know, CDC officials taking their toys and going home, I mean, they did us a huge favor.
Yeah.
They needed to be fired anyway. So it was like, okay, you know, don't let the door hit your butt on the way out. We were very, very fortunate to that. There has to be more of a mass exodus of these individuals because mRNA technology is sort of this new play toy.
Yeah.
And scientists think, oh, well, it's plug and play. We can just, you know, program AI to tell us what the next pathogen is. And they have this buzzword that they're hiding behind called universal vaccination. And so when you look at the buzzword universal vaccination, and even Jay Bhattacharya put it out in a memo talking about a new vaccine platform, it was mRNA written all over it. That needs to go. You know, I've already, you know, emailed him directly and said, you know what? Universal vaccination is code word for gain of function. And so that means that you're weaponizing and you're basically giving permission for scientists in the NIH to weaponize H5N1, to weaponize, SARS-CoV-2 or whatever, monkeypox. And so they can have the pathogen du jour. And if that leaks out, then that's the whole pandemic that, you know, Fauci is sitting on the edge of a seat waiting for so he can, you know, somehow swoop in and save the day again. But these are bad. These are horrible technologies. Nobody has talked about innate immune suppression that happens when you get mRNA shots. Nobody's talked about the effect of the lipid nanoparticle on the immune system.
And I think I think you mentioned that at the very beginning. I remember, in the fall of 2020 when they were talking about it, there was an article, and I think it was you that was involved in it, that questioned the idea of this pegylation, the PEG encapsulation, and you said this is going to create anaphylactic shock. And I've told this to people many times. I said they told you to you contacted the FDA and they said, no, we don't care about it. Contact Pfizer. Of course, Pfizer doesn't care if the FDA doesn't care. That was you, I think, at Children's Health Defense, was it?
It was Children's Health Defense, and I was working with a distinguished colleague, Lynn Redwood, on that. And it turns out that because of exposure to PEG, 75% of the population in the United States carries PEG antibodies. And so that meant, you know, that and many people did go into anaphylaxis And, you know, sudden anaphylactic shock after getting the jab. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was predictable. It was highly predictable. Why would you coat, you know, this lipid nanoparticle with a known allergen? You know, it's a recipe for disaster, but it's convenient. People say, oh, well, you know, you have immune reactions all the time. They frankly didn't really care. They didn't want to do the experimentation. They just wanted to roll out a vaccine, and they were paid handsomely to the tune of about $250 billion over the course of the pandemic in sales of those shots.
Yeah, it's amazing how many billionaires they coined with that. It just shows the utter disregard for safety and health that exists in these institutions and these corporations. I've got a question here from Flower Sower. Thank you for the tip, Flower Sower. Please ask Dr. Hooker when Children's Health Defense is going to pursue and promote removing the protection the pharmaceutical industry hides behind with the 1986 Act. Why isn't this a priority for CHD, she asks.
Well, I am so grateful for that question because we are working on it. We're working with key legislators that we can't name right now on, you know, being able to abolish the 1986 Act. We're also working with HHS, who is trying to re-envision the Act. I mean, frankly, my own opinion is that it just needs to go.
Yes.
That it needs to go away. And then we need guardrails for protection of families of vaccine-injured kids. We need at least a one-time look back for those that were denied justice, especially around the omnibus autism proceedings. You know, my family, and this is why I fight this, my family was in vaccine court for 16 years. We filed our claim in May of 2002, and we did not get a decision, and we were not allowed to even go to oral arguments because of a sort of a vendetta, I believe, that our special master had against our expert witnesses, you know, regarding the toxicity of mercury. You know, my son got a full wall of mercury from his vaccines. That never should have been in there. And arguably, mercury does cause neurodevelopmental disorders.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were never given our day in court. There are thousands upon thousands of families just like that, and they all need justice. They all need their day in court. They were promised that by the 7th Amendment and the 14th Amendment, and they were never given it.
And that's one of the things. That was the key aha moment for me when I found out about the 1986 Act. Very important. That's why, you know, I've talked many times about Dr. Andrew Wakefield's movie,
right?
1986, The Act, I think is the name of it. And it's a dramatization of how it affects a family. I mean, when you do something like that, that shows what this is truly all about. And that should be the moment. I think we need to spread the news far and wide. If we can't stop this, if people at least understand that they have absolutely no liability, and that, as we said before, if somebody you've got a crib, and you might have one or two freak accidents with that crib, they recall all of them, and massive fines for the manufacturers. But nothing for this, no matter how many people they kill. It's absolutely amazing the damage that they're allowed to get away with. And it's that type of stuff that, you know, I look at and it's like, okay, well, I know what's going on here. That's how I make my decisions. But it's always good to have a scientist who's going to go through and tell people what the mechanisms are to get them to understand that. You know, there was just a recent article on Reason. I haven't covered it on the show yet, but I was absolutely stunned to see this article from Reason saying, well, we were told we're all going to die. And look, I'm still alive. I got the vaccine. I know a lot of people got the vaccine and they're still alive. And again, this is another one of the issues why when you have the COVIDindex.science, it's good to have the truth that is out there. We had a lot of people who made predictions that everybody that got this vaccine is going to be dead within a year or so. A guy that I used to work for said that. And that is essentially an alibi for these people because they can point to that exaggeration and say that didn't work. And of course, when Reason looks at this, they should know, first of all, that the statistics are being suppressed. They're being lied to about it. They understand that. They see that all the time, whether you're talking about unemployment figures or you're talking about inflation figures. They know the government lies with statistics. They should expect that the government is going to lie with statistics about this when they rush something to market. But the other part of it is the individual variation that we see from person to person. But there's the third thing that I wanted to ask you about. And that is, there was research that was done by Naomi Wolf, and they went through and looked at the different batches. And I remember at the very beginning of this, again, back in August, September, the CDC was putting out information about a form that they wanted the health providers to collect information on about the vaccine. And so they wanted all your personal information, your address, and so forth and so on. And the only other thing they kept about the vaccine was the lot number. And right. I talked about that at the time because I said it's kind of ominous that they get all this personal information and there's a box there that says refused. I said, what are they going to do with that? And so I said, you know, be aware of that, that's there, that, you know, they're going to keep a record of you if you refuse. But they kept the lot information, and she went back in her research, and they found a tremendous variation. I think it was like 30-fold from the least to the most active ingredients that were in there. Is that something you're aware of? Is that something that is still going on?
It is still going on, and lot-to-lot variability with this type of technology is you know, very, very, you know, the margins for error are really, really large, and that's not something you want to see in anything that you would put in your body.
Exactly.
We saw that, you know, the first batches that were rolled out had so many adverse events that, you know, maybe 80,000, 60,000 would be distributed, and then they would quietly pull them off the market and not tell anybody that that was a hot lot. And you can actually go, you know, to a tracking site that tracks the adverse events on bears and just Google how bad is my batch.
Yeah.
And that will tell you, you know, what adverse events have been reported for that particular batch of vaccines. That's the lot information that you need. And we know that historically, lots and lots of vaccines, not just the COVID shot, have been subject to this level of, you know, poor biotechnology processing. You look at the Merck MMR vaccine, MMR2, that was introduced, I believe, in the United States in about 1978. Nobody knows the exact concentration of virus in that vaccine. Nobody has ever really done the quality control. And so the lot-to-lot variability is very, very high. And the only thing that we do know because of whistleblowers that have come out of Merck is that the maximum concentration of virus in that vaccine is much, much higher than what the FDA ever approved. And so it's another grand medical experiment.
Yeah.
And we know when that happened, it happened in 1999. They started doing a process called overfilling the batches and boosting the virus concentrations. That's when anaphylactic shock really started in earnest and death really started in earnest for the MMR.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need, critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel, all in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
You know what? It sucks to be bored.
But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Our vaccines, after they boosted those virus concentrations, you can see it clear as the nose on your face if you do a VAERS analysis.
Wow. And that's the other thing, too. You know, besides the fact they don't have any liability, so they don't have to care.
Right.
It's just the lackadaisical, haphazard attitude of this. Of all things, medicines and pharmaceuticals that are very concentrated, they are carefully controlled in terms of the amounts of whatever that it is that you're getting. And that, I always looked at that, and I kind of thought, Dr. Hooker, that maybe what they were doing was, that was maybe part of the experiment, you know, experimenting on everybody, because when you're trying to roll out something, you're trying to find the sweet spot between something that is going to be toxic because it's too much and something that's going to be ineffective because it's too little. And so it looks to me like a massive experiment to play around with people. But it's just absolute disregard for any standards of safety or medicine that's there.
Really, it is abysmal. And when you look at the level of contamination in biologics, you know, FDA is separated into two divisions, two main divisions or centers. There's the Centers for Drugs Evaluation and Research, and then there's the Center of Biologics Evaluation and Research. It's called CBER. But historically, those biotech drugs, they come from a soup that has been fermented with a particular genetically modified organism. A lot of times it's E. coli that is involved in that. So you get carryover of E. coli proteins, you get carryover of yeast proteins, you get carryover of foreign DNA.
Wow.
And in the case of the mRNA jabs, then you have carryover of virus particles like SV40. And SV40, we know, causes cancer. It is known to be carcinogenic.
Yeah, it's just awful. I've got a couple of questions here, several questions, as a matter of fact, from the audience. Jerry Alitalo says, please ask Dr. Hooker how he feels about ENF, AKYILDIZ, public admission that COVID mRNA injections are nanoscale machines programmed for human injection. I don't know who that individual is. Are you familiar with his work and that statement?
No,
what do you think
I'm
of that
not.
Statement?
I'm not familiar with the work, but, you know, I will say I have not observed this directly. I obtained some of the mRNA technology shots myself, examined them under the microscope, you know, just used phase contrast microscopy to see what I could find, and then tried to incubate it over a period of time at physiological temperature. And the batch that I saw did not have that in it. I'm not saying that it doesn't. Because again, you know, David, nothing surprises me anymore when I see the things that the government has gotten away with and knowingly gotten away with, you know, with horrible poisons that should have never been introduced, like remdesivir. You know, remdesivir killed the organs that caused the lungs to fill up with fluid, and then the patients had to be intubated to force the fluid out of the lungs because the tissue in the lungs was dying. So many different things have been foisted. Is that technology readily available and off the shelf? Oh, most definitely. Most definitely they could do that. Did they do it? That's something I'm still investigating, and I honestly do not know.
Let me ask you this. This is something else I covered. I remember when it happened. In Japan, they had two different batches of over a million each. It's like one was a million, the other was like 1.2 million of these Pfizer or Moderna mRNA things. And they noticed that there were black particulates in it. And they also noticed that they interacted with magnets, and they threw all of them away. And that was briefly reported, and then then disappeared. And I was just wondering, are you familiar with that? Could you verify that happened? Anything?
I know individuals that you could do that experiment on and, you know, at the injection site, and it was magnetic.
Wow.
what I make of that, was there, you know, were there magnetic particles in the vaccine? Yeah, the technology exists.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, we need all of the documentation of Pfizer. There's a big, big reason why Pfizer wanted to seal those records for 76 years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that is, you know, we're going to find a witch's brew in there.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I think
connection with DARPA. Yeah. Connection with DARPA and BART and everything right there. That's, that points to a witch's brew of some sort. I was just wondering if maybe, you know, it showed up in Japan because of the long travel time. Maybe there was an issue with refrigeration because of the unusual issue about how unusually cold it had to be kept. But it's also, it seems like the Japanese are a little bit more open and honest about some of these things. They were the first ones to report about the biodistribution issues, and that was something that people reported on that got severely punished in the West, but they reported it in Japan.
Exactly. I'm thankful for that information because we didn't know the biodistribution. We were told lies. And I think that they were bold-faced lies. I don't think that they were just mistakes or misspeaking. I think those people had the distribution. They did animal studies. Surely they had the distribution information at that time. In fact, what was leaked in Japan was a Pfizer document.
Hmm. Yes, yes. Got another question here from Karen Carpenter, 27, with Knights of the Storm. She says, question, please comment on Susan Monterez and the vaccine safety data link. Is the VSD accessible for studies?
That is a horrible mess. And I think that we need to apply pressure on HHS. I think we need to apply pressure on Congress to open up the vaccine safety data link. The vaccine safety data link is a ongoing record of about 10 million patients enrolled in 10 different HMOs. It's all de-identified, anonymized, so you can't figure out what patient is what. You can't get any type of identity information from that. But Dr. Daskalakis, I forget his first name, he literally hid and then bragged about hiding the vaccine safety data link from Secretary Kennedy for the first 7 months that Secretary Kennedy was in office. And then Dr. Daskalakis then ended up resigning in protest with Monterez. Then, now we know it's there. Now we know that the vaccine safety data link is there, but there are contractual hiccups that keep anybody from getting data from 2002 on. We do not have that information, and we need to demand that information because, you know, there are so many different things. There are so many different vaccines that were introduced that have never been adequately studied. There are even unvaccinated individuals in the vaccine safety data link because it's not required. The patient enrollment doesn't require vaccination. So I know they have it, you know, they have tens of thousands of records for individuals that have never seen a vaccine. So we need all that information. Monterez was hiding it. Daskalakis was hiding it. Should go to jail. And now the head of the immunization safety office, I believe his name is Mike McNeil, is stonewalling to allow Secretary Kennedy and his advisors to get access to that data. Again, it's deep state gurus that have been there forever.
Yeah.
They're hiding this information. It needs to come open.
Well, again, it's the sort of thing in another field that I was working in. We were trying to get climate data from Dr. Michael Mann, and it was something that he had done at a public university on their work computers, and he had published the information, and it had been used to create public policy. But he absolutely refused to show us the data. You know, when I see something like that, same type of thing that we're seeing with Susan Monterez and the CDC doing, trying to hide this vaccine safety data, that is an admission of guilt. And it's an admission that, you know, science is not on your side. If you are afraid to show people the data and you just want them to do what you say because the position you're in, that is the antithesis of science. I've got another question here from Guard Goldsmith of Liberty Conspiracy. Said, I wonder if the doctor has any knowledge of breakthroughs for long COVID. I still search, finding some interesting hope. What do you think about that?
I am not a practitioner, and I know many, many good practitioners that are starting to have breakthroughs using different cocktails of antivirals, antiparasitics, and antibiotics. That, you know, that's where I'm hearing the success. There are also, you know, and David, I thought I'd never hear myself saying this. There are also individuals that are using hypochlorite solutions. You know, they're not, it's not bleach. Everybody says, oh, yeah, it's bleach. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, no, these are very, very dilute, very, very safe solutions. And they're doing, nasal lavage, on patients. That is helping clear the virus. That's helping clear the spike. And then there are myriad sort of recipes. Homeopathy is, you know, I'm hearing from those practicing naturopaths and homeopaths are having really, really good success with long COVID and COVID vaccine injury. So, you know, follow the rule that, you know, try it, do one thing at a time. See if it works. If it doesn't work, ditch it and move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because you shouldn't suffer.
That's
We've
right.
brought my son a tremendous amount of way with his vaccine injury that he sustained at 15 months. And my house is a house of many clinical trials, whether it's allopathic, whether it's naturopathic, you know, where it comes from. You know, I honestly don't care if it's effective. You need to use it. And if it's not effective, then move on.
I agree. I look at it, and if it's something that is not going to be harmful, you know, I'll try it. You know, how much does it cost? I'll buy it. Going back to the old song from 1970s.
Hey, it's Ben Ferguson, and I want you to pause what you're doing for just 1 minute, and I want you to hear about Alejandra. She lives in a remote community with very few resources and little to no health care. So when Alejandra gets sick, her parents have no real options, no doctors in their community, and no money for real medical care. By the third day, her body was shutting down. She woke up and just long enough to tell her mom, I can't take the pain anymore. I can't keep going. Her parents drove hours to find a doctor who tried everything, but she needed a private hospital, and that was impossible for her family to afford. And that is when Compassion International stepped in. Now, through Compassion, Alejandra was treated, and against all odds, she survived. She lived because someone, just like you, took action. Right now, unfortunately, there are children just like Alejandra who won't survive unless someone like you steps in. Compassion International partners with local churches, providing children with the support that they need. Critical medical care, plus food, education, and the hope of the gospel. All in Jesus' name. So help a child just like Alejandra today. You can visit compassion.com. That's compassion.com.
It's Bretzky. I don't know how they let me on this podcast, but while I'm here, I might as well tell you the only place to play blackjack, roulette, and live craps in Texas is SpinQuest.com, baby. That's SpinQuest.com. New users get a $30 coin package for only $10. I mean, that's a hell of a deal for all you 10-gallon hat wearers down there in Texas.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Let me ask you about what's going on with autism, because I know that you spend a lot of time with autism, focusing
right.
on that. I'm looking at this Tylenol thing. To me, it looks like a red herring. It looks like they're trying to dodge the connection for the vaccine stuff. What is your take on that? I mean, I just don't see that Tylenol has corresponded. Uptake in Tylenol has changed radically, that would explain the radical change in autism. I just don't buy that at all. What do you think about that? What do you think is happening?
Well, I think, you know, I've done a lot of research on this and spent a lot of time with the lead researcher in that whole field of acetaminophen, neurodevelopmental disorders, and autism. His name is William Parker. You know, I actually sat down with him for 5 days mm-hmm. and said, look, convince me, you know, because he was hounding me about this. And so the thing that's really convenient about Tylenol is that it is a quick solution to a not so quick problem. And I think that, yeah, there are cases that are definitely associated with some type of infection, some type of vaccination, followed by acetaminophen, definitely, you know, sort of a 1-2 punch. But Tylenol itself is a necessary component, but it's not sufficient. You can't just say, oh, you know, Tylenol is bad. It is the individuals that have genetic susceptibility that then have a huge amount of oxidative stress, like multiple vaccines all at the same time. And then you add Tylenol to the mix. That's really the perfect storm. So you can't just take care of one and say, oh, we've broken the chain. All of them need to be taken care of. All of them need to be addressed. I think that the administration came out with regarding Tylenol because they thought it's an easy fix. But, you know, it is, we didn't get here just from Tylenol. We got here from years of abuse of the system, and that needs to be fixed. And then we can see the autism epidemic go away.
That's good. Yeah, I feel like, you know, when you look at this, it seemed to coincide with a rapid escalation of the vaccine schedule. Now,
yes.
What is going on with that? You know, what is happening with that? I know you were involved with the measles issue, you know, where they said a couple of people died in Texas, and you investigated that with the families. I know the media is still selling that narrative. I think you effectively debunked that was what had happened there. Yeah.
Yeah, they died of bacterial pneumonia that
yes.
was left untreated.
Yes. But I'm still seeing mainstream articles say, oh, it killed two people and so forth. And, you know, so what are the chances of us pulling back on this vaccine schedule? I know that it's tremendous support within the bureaucracy and the corporations and the media. And I guess that's another part of it. What's going to happen with the ads, the issue with that? I know that RFK Jr. has talked about that.
Well, my hope is that, you know, direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising will go by the wayside. I mean, it's gotten ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely, you know, inane. I watch news and old people TV. So, you know, my wife is a serial addict to the Hallmark Channel. And so it's all the drugs, biologics, and vaccines that you can push on old people.
Yeah.
You know, every day, every ad, it is very infrequent that you see anything else. And so those need to be pulled. And I believe that Secretary Kennedy is working stepwise to get there.
I believe that they're de facto fraudulent, you know, in the sense that,
yes.
you know, ask your doctor. Well, you don't understand that they're not giving you all the information that you need to make an informed decision. And so it is really fraudulent what they're putting out there, even if they have somebody rattling off very rapidly all the adverse effects that they are going to talk about. It's still not sufficient to be truthful, I think.
No, it doesn't tell you how effective that particular therapy is. It doesn't tell you how effective the vaccine is at preventing that particular disease. I mean, we see, you know, over and over again, RSV, shingles, pneumonia, you know, flu, over and over again. But they don't, you know, the dirty little secret is some years that when you get the flu shot, you're more likely to get the flu than if you didn't get the flu shot.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know,
I've seen that over and over again, almost
yes,
pretty
yeah.
much every year. People
year
who get it,
year.
They get it right away, yeah.
yeah. And we know individuals that got the trivalent, the quadrivalent flu shot, got them for their babies, and the babies died within hours. I mean, we're investigating several cases of SIDS right now that were the quadrivalent flu shot.
Wow.
And it's just, it's such a shame. You know, when you see these babies die.
Yes.
And then, you know, the entire system is there to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be able to expose it.
That's just horrific. Yeah, I've played a clip several times of a lady that was on social media, and she said it wasn't until she saw the sudden adult death syndrome stuff that was out there that it clicked with her. And she said, I killed my baby. And I said so many times, I wish I could talk to her. She didn't kill her baby. It's people who lied to her, people who knew better. Who killed her baby for money. That's the saddest thing about it. I've got a couple more comments here. Real Jason Barker with Knights of the Storm said the CDC took down the publicly available tools that show excess death spikes after the vaccine rollout. That's very damning info right there. In reply to a person who said, I can't even get the excess death statistics anymore. I could in 2022 for every year since it started to be recorded. What's going on with that? And do you have that information there at covidindex.science?
That has been pulled down. And I believe that that's addressed in covidindex.science. We do not have the new data regarding excess deaths. And it is weird because I published on excess deaths in DMED, the Department of Defense Medical Epidemiological Database. Mm-hmm. I published on excess deaths in 2022, from the rollout of the vaccine. And all of a sudden, all this stuff just dried up. CDC was no longer reporting excess deaths on their website. There's so many shell games on, you go to the National Center for Health Statistics. They never say flu deaths. They always say influenza and pneumonia. They combine those two categories. So people will get scared and get their flu shots, even though they're not effective at preventing death, preventing serious illness, and many times not even effective at doing the flu. So yeah, a lot of those databases are pulled down. I do encourage any and everybody to FOIA the CDC for specific information. It's as simple as an email. Just, FOIA request at cdc.gov, mm-hmm. FOIA request at cdc.gov. Put very concise language of what you want. Limit, the ask to specific information. And then by law, they have to respond to you within 30 days.
Yeah. I remember when they did that with the Defense Department's database of DMED stuff. I remember there's some doctors that saw how things were exploding in a lot of different areas. And their absurd reply was, not that there was something going on with the vaccine, but they went back and they looked at it. They compared it over 5 years. They said, all of our data for 5 years is wrong. And it's like, come on.
And then the next thing,
they pulled it all down. I mean, if this isn't the most juvenile cover-up, it's just absolutely amazing. It would be comical if it wasn't so horrific what it's doing to people's lives. Bulldog says they could have very specifically targeted people by lot number. Yeah, they could. S.G. Sutton, can Dr. Hooker tell us about the volunteer opportunity with the COVID index?
Oh, that is so good. That is such a great question. If you look at the covidindex.science, there is a box that you can click on to volunteer. And these volunteers, they're basically individuals that go out and they get new information, newly published information for the COVID index. They curate it. It's very, very simple. You fill out a very, very simple form. And then once you filled out that form, then it goes to a very small committee, and then they give you thumbs up or thumbs down, like, oh, yeah, this should go in the COVID index. About 95% of it does go mm-hmm. into the index. Mm-hmm. But that helps us keep it up to date. We have an army of volunteers that does that, and we're recruiting more volunteers. You get free COVID index merch, you get free CHD merch, and we love our volunteers. I know there's a lot of people out there that want to help that are really studious and nerdy like me, and they like to read this literature. And so, if that is your vibe, if that's the thing that you like to do, make sure that you check out that volunteer opportunities tab on covidindex.science.
That's great. That's great. And again, yeah, covidindex.science, and they have, I guess most of them are 1 minute videos that you can just very easily click on a thing and share it on social media. Get this information around. That's the most important thing. People are not informed, or they're misinformed about what's going on here. And so it's very important to get those videos that they've put together out there. I got one more question here from Karen Carpenter with Knights of the Storm says, does Dr. Hooker think that ultrasound and Wi-Fi, EMF, could play a role in autism? What do you think about that?
I absolutely believe that it plays a role in autism. A lot of autism researchers have looked into this, and they find statistically significant correlations with EMF. There was very little reason for 5G. 5G is basically there for surveillance purposes, so so you can have better internet, but so the government can know more about you.
Yeah.
And so you look at all these, new technologies, the Internet of Things. So, my phone can talk to my computer, my refrigerator, and, my ironing board or whatever. that is producing energetic signals. It's producing energetic signals in the IR range, in the microwave range, and that is bad for you. I mean, there's nothing good about it. I mean, if I had my choice, my own house would be hardwired.
Yeah.
But what we do is we turn off our devices and Wi-Fi at night and have just like an old clock that tells us the one that you have to change during daylight savings time, and just tells us what time it is. You know, just sleep with it off. Just start with turning your Wi-Fi off, because there is a connection. I don't believe that it's completely causal, but there is a connection with Wi-Fi and with excitotoxic processes in the brain, and you just don't want to stimulate that.
I agree. I mean, when I was going back trying to do some research on Moncef Slaoui, I found all these different conferences that he was speaking at, Fauci was speaking at, and Francis Collins was speaking at, and they were all talking about electroceuticals. And I thought, well, this is going to be the next big thing, electroceuticals. So it's like, okay, well, if you're going to treat people electrically with things like that, then clearly EMF is going to have a big effect on people. And
yeah, it's a tacit admission, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
EMF does have an effect. If we can manipulate it to, you know, do, you know, some type of medical intervention, then what is it doing every day?
Yes, exactly. And you know, we had Alan Fry, who worked for the Navy doing experiments, and he documented the Fry effect, which you can, certain frequencies, you'll hear it, like a clicking type of thing. You know, just like we had, the military discovered microwave cooking, you know, the radar ranges of a manna in the early days, you know, then just noticed that their coffee was getting hot. Well, if you see something like that, there's a little bit of smoke there. There's got to be a fire there somewhere as well, I think. I started looking at that in conjunction with the Havana effect that was out there, because people were saying they were hearing a clicking stuff. It's like, oh, wait, that sounds like the Fry effect. Maybe that is some kind of directed EMF. Not sure. And I got another question here. We're just about out of time. This is from Jerry Alitalo. He says, please ask Dr. Hooker how he felt immediately after listening closely to DARPA-associated neuroscientist James Gandaro's horrifying public lectures. Thank you.
You know, I am, that one stumped me. I know of those lectures. I just don't know enough about those lectures. I apologize. I should know this information. My defense is that we're playing whack-a-mole with everything right
now. That's right. There's so many. I mean, these people have billion-dollar budgets, and they're constantly coming up with one bizarre Frankenstein experiment after the other. It truly is a scary situation that we find ourselves in this particular time. It is an interesting time, and it is a very dangerous time. But thank you so much for the work that you do at Children's Health Defense and for the COVIDindex.science. Thank you, Dr. Hooker. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Are you in Texas, and are you tired of not being able to play blackjack, roulette, and even craps? Well, guess what? I got the solution for you. SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com. Has over 1,000 slots and table games you can play from the comfort of your own home, absolutely free, with the ability to win real cash prizes. Now get in your big diesel truck and go play SpinQuest today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an Elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.